Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for April 19th, 2018. A few topics to talk about tonight. Again, diamonds in outer space are in the news. I'll be talking about that. And also the future of space, some of the current things going on, some of the odd things going on in the world of space. First of all, I'm going to talk about the water filters. We are getting behind on shipping water filters simply because of heavy ordering. And so I don't know what's going on, but anyway, the issue is just simply this, that the production of the water filters is fixed. And when ordering goes up, then there's a crunch, basically. But my advice is just get in line, get your filter, and expect a few weeks wait before it's shipped. And that's just the way it is. But you're getting the best products. I had people write in and say, well, I'm just going to buy something cheaper. Well, I think you're better off just waiting a week or two longer and taking a product that is far superior. And that's what I'm selling. And at a very reasonable price also. So, and also shipping has gone up. So far have not had time to go in and change the shipping prices, raising my prices to absorb that, because a lot of the items are free shipping. And so just to give you an example, just a stainless steel water filter that a year ago cost $15 to ship across the country now costs $30. It's doubled. And really, you know, when Trump brought up the issue with Jeff Bezos and Amazon getting, you know, a dollar of free shipping because they're getting these bulk shipping rates from UPS or whoever, then guess who? Somebody's got to pay for that. And it's the little guy like myself that gets to pay for that, or you get to pay for that. So I'm really, these companies should be broken apart. That's monopolization. And really under the federal government should be doing this. Sleepy Jeff Sessions, our DOJ up there, Department of Justice attorney, the guy's just, you know, he's not with it. I mean, there's so many things going on in this country that need attention, and he's just, you know, he's asleep at the throttle. Yeah, he stepped out of the job the first day he was in it. They need a real go-getter, a young guy that's aggressive, and in the case of Amazon, simply break him apart. In the case of Google, in the place of Facebook. These are monopolies that have grown up overnight. And then, see, what they're going to do is just the opposite. They're going to create a government agency to control this, which guarantees that these monopolies stay there, because what they're going to do is say, oh, well, we can't have this. We need regulation. And they're going to put so many regulations in place that nobody else can come in and compete with them. And that's basically, by the way, what happened in the space program. The FAA did nothing with outer space. The FAA had nothing in place for NASA safety, even though they were flying and landing on airports and coming in and out of the atmosphere and whatever. The FAA did nothing until Bert Rutan made it clear that it was easy to go into outer space, and Bert Rutan did it for under $10 million. Built a spacecraft system, could send it up 5 times in a week if he wanted to. He'd bring it back down, look at it, inspect it, send it back up, and he did it twice to win the Ansari X Prize, something that NASA could not do ever in, you know, 50 years and gazillions of dollars. Bert Rutan does for $10 million and does it overnight and like falling off a log. So anyway, the whole end issue here is that the FAA stepped in and created all kinds of red tape, really doubled his expense to crawl through all of the red tape and the paperwork so that he could go into outer space and win the X Prize. But now what they're doing, and this is something that just happened recently, NASA and the aerospace companies are bringing out the old hacks, the old Apollo astronauts, or as some people call them, the astronauts, N-O-T-S, and that allegedly went to the moon. And they're coming up in front of Congress saying, well, we just can't have this private space stuff going on because it can only be done, or Neil deGrasse Tyson, Mr. Fairy Tale Science Fabricated Information himself, we can't have this going on. Only governments are big enough and important enough to do this. It has to be totally regulated, and no other corporation should be allowed to do this because it's just too big and too important and too expensive. And all the reasons they're giving are all the reasons why small corporations can and will do this. Because, you know, look, here's Elon Musk, who's taken his, you know, extra money. You know, he's a rich guy in building rockets. He's the only guy that can get to the space station today, private company, lean and mean and getting it done. You know, NASA can't do that. But yet you have these old hacks in there defending the Royal Guard as if they're the, you know, the Royal Guard has gotten fat under the watch. And, you know, they're not protecting their turf. So what do? They bring people in to try and convince Congress that through talk that they just shouldn't be allowing this private space stuff to be going on. But anyway, back to my original point, that monopolies grow up and should be broken apart. And that's why the antitrust laws exist. And there's collusion between the government. The CIA owns a lot of these. What happened is the CIA bought Google and Facebook, and people like Zuckerberg are just front people. They're the poster child. But the people that really own it and operate it and manipulate it and gather your data and keep it and use it are the agencies like the NSA and the CIA, you know, the deep state, etc. So at any rate, this whole rant began because I was talking about the increased pricing of shipping. And so I have not had time to get in and raise my prices to accommodate shipping. And so anyway, the end result is that you can still get pretty good prices on my webpage for all the water filter stuff. By the way, I should also tell you that if you have tried to order books over the past maybe 5 months off of my webpage, the order buttons you found did not work. Well, that's all fixed now. I have drop-down menus. It's very simplified. And a lot of the books I don't sell individually anymore. They are only sold in groups now. Some of the books, like the Weather book and the Calculate Primes book, are sold separately for a reason, or the Wing Generator book, because a lot of people, I find, don't want those necessarily. And the Weather book, for example, comes in an ebook format that's a lot less expensive. It comes in the packages. But anyway, all that information is on the webpage. There's a bit of reorganization because people simply don't order one book anymore. And it's funny, people will write in and say, oh, I just wanted that one book. Well, you know, it's more work for us. We actually lose money by selling you one book. So if you're going to the webpage looking at books, there, all of them are available. It's just that you have to look for the package that they're in. And you don't really just want to read one book. There's a number of reasons for not selling individual books, because they go together. They're a set. It's a set of information. And you should read all of them, not just one that you think you should read. So anyway, all of the buttons, and they're very convenient drop-down menus. There's only two drop-down menus, one for the library packages and one for the more individualized sets of books, the specialized books. And the calendar, let me remind you about that. The Recalendar Sun Star Clock, a unique product, doesn't exist anywhere else in the universe. And so all of that on my webpage. But the water filters are there. They're still free shipping and good prices, especially for the water filters and the 10 packs of replacement filter elements, etc. JMCCSCI.com. So anyway, okay, here's a little aside topic. Evo Morales is the president of Bolivia. And he has effectively ousted the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency of the United States, the International Monetary Fund, the U.S. Agency for International Development, the Organization of American States. And these are all front organizations to make sure that the Latin American countries are basically banana republics. And if you're not familiar with that term, that's a term that really grew out of the 1950s, the post-World War II CIA world, in which Latin American countries were treated as basically slave states, where the U.S. would, the CIA would come in and install the governor, the leader that they wanted, and then operate their drug trade, or the sugar companies would come in, or the fruit companies, whatever it was, and then utilize the local people as basically slave labor, and then operate like it was their land. Or the International Monetary Fund would come in and say, well, gee, you guys need this big loan for development. And then the installed leaders would get fabulously wealthy and keep the rest of the people down in the dirt, once again, as slave labor. Mexico became highly successful doing this. And I mentioned this on John Moore's show the other morning, or was it yesterday morning, that the Mexican people certainly learned how to protest in the United States. So wouldn't it be interesting to see them go back and try that in Mexico? Oh, no, they want to protest here where they can get away with it. In Mexico, John laughed. He said, yeah, that would last about a New York second until they were lined up and shot. Protesting in Mexico or any other country is probably not going to get you very far. But my point back to Evo Morales, the president of Bolivia, he made a statement at a recent international meeting of governments. He said that the United States is the biggest threat to democracy and freedom. He criticized the U.S. involvement in Syria, and a lot of local people are criticizing the U.S. involvement in Syria. Just a comment on that, there is good evidence that, first of all, Trump did not respond right away. Second of all, his response was coordinated clearly with Putin. And the way these things work, there's a very strange game of chess going on up at the very high levels. And what they did is they blew up a bunch of inoperative, storage facilities, liquid storage facilities, that had really nobody there. There was really no people there even. And it was more of a show of demonstration, kind of like, look, we really took care of business here. But everybody knows that this was a false flag set up by Israel, Mossad, the CIA, and the deep state in the United States, look at the situation. ISIS had been defeated. They didn't exist anymore. Trump stood by while Russia blew up an encampment of ISIS, one of the very last ones that was a stronghold, including CIA. Killed a lot of CIA people there. And basically, Trump understood that the CIA under Obama and Hillary Clinton were funding and supplying ISIS with arms, and they were coming through Libya, through the U.S. consulate in Libya. So there were a lot of arms being shipped to Libya. But isn't it odd that the U.S. Embassy had no protection at all? You know, this gets very strange out there, folks, so you have to understand what's going on. So when Trump came in, he started to clean house. He started to clean up ISIS, and the U.S. was pulling out when this happened. Russia was pulling out. Syria was going back, and the people were going back to moving into the country that had been displaced when this happened. And so who is to gain? Who's the party that would benefit by this? Because Syria was on the list of Israeli, it was the Israeli hit list that we knew about 7 years ago, that Syria was the second to the last in the list. Iran was the last in the list. And so who is to gain and who responded immediately was Israel. And so, you know, this is just, this is fact. This is not taking sides. This is not, this is just a fact of what happened. So the issue of Evo Morales and a lot of these other countries is that the United States is basically an international bully and has been. And it's from what I've seen in the background is that Trump was waiting. First of all, he waited over a week to respond. The response was very singular and calculated, and then that was it. And part of that was to roust out, to flush out, so to speak, players in the deep state who were integrally involved in the execution of this false flag sarin gas poisoning in Syria. So at any rate, but the DEA, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the OAS, the Organization of American States, the International, or the U.S. Agency for International Development, are all front agencies of the World Bank. And what they do is they come into a country through manipulation, and in the case of Brazil, removing the president through public defamation, the control of the news media, which is another way of controlling the population and public sentiment. And it's a lot easier to do in a lot of third world countries because a lot of people have not understood yet that you can't trust the news media. But there's a growing list of that. So all I'm saying is this is a little bit of an aside. And people, for example, in the United States don't understand what's going on in Venezuela. They certainly don't understand what's going on in Cuba. And, the treatment, the standard treatment for Latin American countries has been to treat them, as I said, like a banana republic, where they were just slave labor for the international corporations that, took the resources, and this is worldwide. So to actually reverse this is going to take a long time. But these countries are one by one electing officials that are for the public. And that's called democracy, not for the benefit of the international corporations. And so anyway, this is something I wish people would travel more and get to understand people in foreign countries more and stop listening to the Western press. The mainstream media, I think it's becoming like CNN. Nobody even watches it anymore because it's so ridiculous. MSNBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, so distorted, so obliquely distorted that even, very conservative little old ladies don't even watch it anymore or listen to it. But it's important to understand this because it also affects, for example, science. Scientists in foreign countries, if they want to succeed, have to play the NASA game. If they want access to good equipment, they have to bow to what NASA says. And that's not just foreign countries, the United States. If scientists want to have access to equipment, then they have to bow to the party line, and they can't say anything. They can't be like Jim McCanney. They can't have a radio show where they go on every week and expose the garbage that's going on, which I'm going to do it a little bit in a minute here. But that also gives me a platform to explain what's really going on, for example, in outer space, which leads me to the, I started to mention this, that the old guard, the Lockheed Martin, which is a combined conglomerate of, you know, Martin Marietta, the old Colorado-based corporation, which built a lot of rockets, etc. So Lockheed Martin is a conglomerate. Boeing is a new conglomerate, you know, Ball Aerospace. And a lot of these have combined to become sleeker, and there's some that you probably have never heard of before. But they're, you know, billions of dollars in contracts. You know, when a new project would come up or a new rocket, they would all bid on these, and the best, the government would select a bid based on, of course, supposedly objective factors. Not true at all. But no matter who got the contract, they were all going to get a piece of it, because Martin Marietta would. Or Lockheed Martin now would hire Boeing to do a certain part of it. They would all get a piece of it. But, of course, the lion's share of the fat in this, the overhead that went into building beautiful mansions down on the San Diego coastline, that money, you know, or buying nice boats for the CEOs, et cetera, that money went to the primary contractor. But what I'm saying, though, is in the United States, science is government run. It is funded by the government. Private industries are not private industries. They are subsidiaries of the government agencies. That's where they get their money. They don't create value. They don't go into outer space because it's interesting or fun, like Elon Musk. Just a comment. Musk, I really like what he's doing. And, you know, he's had some rough bumps financially. Well, anybody would, doing what he's doing. There's no guarantee of success out there. But the comment I want is, when the Falcon heavy lift rocket was going off a couple weeks ago, he was in the, you know, you could see he was in a bunker down at the Cape watching it on the screen. And at one point, he just ran outside, and with all these other people that were there out there cheering and everything, he's standing there looking up at the rocket heading off into space, and he looked like a five-year-old kid. The look on his face was just, you know, like a five-year-old kid with his first toy rocket. If you've ever seen a kid, you know, or a 10-year-old kid that took his first little toy rocket out and shot it off and watched it in amazement as it went up in the air, you know. And that's what he looked like, just, you know, pure youth and excitement over this. And, you know, and it was a very special event. I mean, and then the two boosters came down and landed. I mean, good grief, this was amazing, amazing. So, but see, that's the future of space. Look at, he did all of this with his money, and for, you know, let's say under $1 billion, maybe, you know, $400 or $500 million, with all the employees and all the engineering and all the construction and all the buildings and everything else that goes with having a major business, and did this, and there was no profit in that. Remember that there was no government funding. There was no NASA, this is something this private company did on its own for the interest of doing it. And so at any rate, I just find this amazing that, you know, that NASA's getting, what, $20 billion a year and has been for the last 50 years, and they have nothing, have zero to show for it. So the future of space clearly is with private agencies. And we're going to hear this rumbling going on for a number of years. as NASA slowly dies, and as it, you know, as it, you know, slowly puts itself in the coffin and lowers itself into its eternal grave, you know, we're going to hear these rumblings that they should, that the public should support NASA. So, and, you know, what's interesting, though, is that science itself, and my science, will come to the forefront because the reality is that people that are going into space need real science. They need to understand what's going on out there. And they're not going to be successful unless they do understand. And so the two sides of this, the NASA fairy tale science and the fake electric universe yo-yo science will go by the wayside because it has no functionality. Neither one is based on reality. And the real electric universe, which is what I created, and the real understanding of how the universe works in the very subtle ways of electricity, which is a minor portion. Gravity controls the majority of the heavenly body movement and, say, rockets that are big. But there are electrical effects that you have to be aware of. You have to understand these so you can mitigate results. So, and that's something, too, that NASA simply doesn't understand. To have a space program right now, NASA has the Orion program, where they're sending up spacecraft up through the radiation belts, the Van Allen belts. And one has to ask, well, what's the big deal if 18 Apollo astronauts supposedly went through this, went to the moon, came back, and nothing ever happened? Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, that's another clue in the very long list that NASA never went to the moon, because they don't describe the effects that you would see. And just a little aside note here, I knew a guy personally. His name was Ralph Plaisted. He was an elderly guy and I met him. We put on some banquets together because he was also an outdoorsman, and so we had these. They were put on by a little organization, and they were what do you call wild game suppers. And Ralph would give a talk, and then I'd give a talk about, at the time I had a business. I won't go into all the details, but anyway, Ralph Plaisted went to the North Pole, and he did this in 1968. And of course, when I was a kid, we were taught that Robert Perry had gone to the North Pole and was a great explorer. And what became obvious is that Perry never made it to the North Pole. He was hunkered down in a tent with his crew of people, and some of them died. They had starvation, and they were with some Inuit guides. And the Inuits lived because what they were doing was the only food they had was fish. They ran out of food. And it was very clear what Plaisted said was that the indications, when you read Perry's diary, he said, there's no way he went to the North Pole because what he described is not like the ice pack. And, for example, the ice would shift every day. Every day there was working and shifting of the ice, and there would be a mountainous ridge there today in front of you where there wasn't yesterday or behind you. And he said this was going on constantly. And Perry never talked about this. And so it became clear once they really started to analyze it, and other people had questioned Perry also. But, of course, National Geographic had sponsored the Perry expedition back in, what, 1908 or something like that, like a good 60 years earlier, and, of course, touted it, promoted it as a huge success. But Plaisted decided to go to the North Pole. And what he found out is that, no, in fact, Robert Perry did not get to the North Pole. So Plaisted is now legitimately, and rightly so, hailed as the first person to traverse the ice and get to the North Pole. And I remember him talking about it when they got to what they believed was the North Pole by shooting the stars, etc. Then they had a flyover. They had an airplane come up there and flew across one way and came across 90 degrees the other way and confirmed that they, in fact, were at the North Pole and planted a flag and then came back. So anyway, that's a good example of a claim that was held for literally 60 years that an amazing feat had been accomplished when it really had not. And I think we're going to find that too. I mean, this is my official position on the moon landings, or the alleged moon landings, is just that they are a scientific claim without verification. And that's on my webpage. That's my official statement. So am I saying that NASA did not go to the moon? No. What I'm saying is that all indications, all evidence points to the fact that they did not. And they have not presented evidence, nor has anybody else presented evidence. And that's really the key, is that NASA has tried to present a lot of evidence, but the proof is literally in the fact that there has not been any independent corroboration, in spite of the fact that many satellites have orbited the moon, photographed, and nobody's come back and said, yeah, there they are. And so anyway, that's the official statement. But the reason I mentioned Ralph Plaisted is because the Robert Perry, when I was a kid, you know, in the 1950s or 60s growing up, I was taught that Robert Perry had reached the North Pole and was the first man, great explorer, you know, and all of this stuff. That legend lived for 60 years before they finally figured out that he didn't, and he faked it. He had faked it. And the National Geographic Foundation, you know, I mean, had to support this and then, of course, turn the other direction. Well, that's whatever, you know. But faking things in the world when things become, when there's pressure on you, or just like what Trump did in Syria, faking an invasion or an attack under the, you know, the guise of, you know, whatever. You know, these are things that just happen. So, anyway, the future of space is in private space enterprise. And it's just this simple, that there will be new techniques coming along to get into outer space. And I already know about this, so it's not like something new has to be invented. This stuff already exists. And I've been part and parcel to quite a bit of it myself. You might remember that when I was, after my Cornell years, I was out in Los Angeles looking for funding for my projects. And you can see some of that in my books and references to it. But this stuff existed a long time ago, and you know, the future of outer space is going to be a lot different. Just like right now, for example, batteries. The capability of batteries is really, really amazing today. The size and the power density, etc. And I liken that to, for example, digital photography. When digital photography first came out, even Kodak, I mean, I had my doubts about it, but even Kodak, the major company on the planet dealing with photography, didn't go digital. Other companies went digital. Finally, digital became so versatile that you could send photos. You didn't have to have all the chemicals. Finally, Kodak company came back and went into the digital industry, but it was far too late. It had already taken off. And the camera makers like Nikon and Canon dropped their lines of roll film camera and went digital and left basically Kodak sitting there, you know, with his finger up its nose. But that's another good example of companies that just don't see the way of the future, and NASA is that way. IBM, you don't hear much about IBM anymore because they refused to believe that the personal computer was going to somehow take over their mainframe business. And so IBM is not a computer maker that is current. Along came Hewlett-Packard, and then the chip manufacturers, you know, and Intel and all the other, you know, progress that was made, and left IBM out in the cold. You know, here's the biggest company. IBM was formed after World War II because of the data processing that occurred in World War II, with the cards and the, you know, all of the technology that existed back then. When I first started programming computers, I used cards. You know, you type in, if you made a mistake, you had to put in a new card, and they had to be in an order, and you take it into the computer room, and there was the computer, and you got to load your cards into the stack, watch the computer read them, the cards in, that was your program. And if there was a mistake, then you had to go back, and if it didn't compile or it didn't work right, you had to go back and replace the cards and then put it back into the stack again and put them in to the card reader, and that was the first level of computing, you know. Compared to today, there were no terminals that you sat down and interfaced with a computer. Didn't exist then, you know. And so I grew up in the computer world, watching all the changes, etc. But the space age is going to be that way too. The major players, NASA is just, they're still playing around with, you know, 30, 50-year-old technology, you know, 1,200-year-old technology. They're still working with rockets, and that's going to be the way of the past. It's just not the way of the future. So anyway, I wanted to do a little commentary on that because this is also for kids. When you see things going on in space, just remember the following, that when you grow up, space is going to be very different. It's going to be much more accessible, and it's going to be accessible because of private corporations. So, you know, the idea of sending money to the government for space, you know, they're going to keep doing it, but ignore it. You know, it's money wasted. It's not money that's going to bring fruition, because those companies are stuck in a rut. And they're also afraid of failure, which is something that is a very big issue with companies, and they get so big that they're worried about failure because anything they do costs a lot of money. So what they do is they just keep doing the same thing they've been doing, while smaller, leaner companies are innovating. So big corporations lose their ability to innovate, and as a result, they go by the wayside. You know, the Packards, you know, there were cars in the 1950s, the Packards and the Oldsmobiles. You don't hear about them anymore because they kept building big cars that people didn't want. Okay, well, enough of that. Diamonds in outer space are in the news again. This article just hit. They found there was a particular meteorite that fell out in the African desert, and somebody picked it up, brought it in, they examined it, and it had microdiamonds in it. So, of course, it has to be matched with fairy tale science, right, to accommodate diamonds from outer space. Well, I've been talking about many examples from outer space where we have diamonds. For example, in the bones of the mastodons that are up in Alaska, where the river has washed these animals down, and their, you know, their bones are sticking out of the mud walls of the river. And the upper side is completely splattered with microdiamonds that came in, obviously, from outer space, from above. And the underside has not one impact of the microdiamonds. And these are extremely small. They're, you know, like 1/32nd of an inch or smaller. So these are very small. It's not like you would even see them if you were walking by and just took a close look. These are, you know, you would have to very closely examine. But, you know, literally millions of these came in at a single time when the mastodons were dying. Now, isn't that interesting? So that would, for me, because I understand that the comet, the big comet Venus, was the main cause of that, that comets are associated with diamonds. And I've talked about this before. I talk about it in my books. I talk about it in the Diamond Principle, that diamonds are formed in outer space in the electric current on the nose side of the comet. And so anyway, the Tier 2 fairy tale science story that comes down to us, as soon as these diamonds were discovered in a meteorite, then they said, oh, well, here's what must have happened. Many planets formed in the early solar system, and then due to collisions, massive collisions, these planets exploded, and threw these meteorites out, and they traveled through space and time, and eventually landed on planet Earth. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, diamonds, first of all, according to the standard story, occur down deep in a planet, and they take millions of years to form. So right there, you get a contradiction. And of course, these people, you know, creating fairy tale science, there's no calculations, there's no real understanding, there's no comparison to what the standard theories say. And so they have these planets forming and then blowing apart. And in this whole all took place in very short order. So how is there time to form diamonds in this planet that was molten, and, you know, where there would not have been, solidified rock, and then the conglomeration of carbon? You know, none of this makes any sense. And what I've said before, too, is that how could you create a diamond in material, in rock around it, that's softer? Because you need pressure. So, I mean, none of this makes any sense, including the theory that diamonds form deep in the Earth, because diamonds are the hardest known material. And so that means that everything around them is softer. So how do you get the pressure to form the diamond if the material around it is softer? You know, it doesn't make any sense. It can't happen. So the real formation of diamond is in outer space, and this is confirmed in a laboratory. You take a vacuum chamber, pump it down, do atmospheric pressures, the equivalent to outer space. Then you vaporize carbon. So you take a block of carbon, vaporize it, so now you have a vacuum with carbon vapor. Send in an electron stream, and what happens is this induces the formation of what are known as their Bucky surfaces, Buckminster Fuller surfaces. So they're the carbon covalent bonding structure that's very strong, and this forms in a surface of a globe. It's within that globe that the diamonds build, because there's enough force, there's enough pressure that the carbon material in the middle can create the diamond. This is in the vacuum of outer space. So where did the diamonds come from in the meteorite? They came from the production in outer space on the nose side of a large comet. And this could have happened, you know, not too far in the distant past. And the meteorite could have been from some object that came in from outer space and simply collided with diamond particles that were out in outer space, because when they are in a stream, there's a lot of them. There's zillions of them. This is a very common process. It's nothing unusual. And so the diamonds come in and mix with the meteoric material, and then when they come into the Earth's atmosphere, of course, they can make it all the way to the ground, some of them, without completely burning up. I saw a meteorite about 2 months ago. I was off in a remote part of the planet and looking at the night sky, and all of a sudden, whoosh, this streak came across. It was amazingly big. and it looked like it burned up before it hit the ground. But a lot of heat involved in coming into the Earth's atmosphere at, you know, what, 20,000 miles an hour, possibly faster. So containing diamonds in outer space. In fact, there's spectroscopic signatures of diamond rings that are around other star systems. So we know that diamonds exist in outer space. But is it because they somehow formed in a planet and then the planet was blown apart by a collision and then all of a sudden the diamonds became littered through outer space? Well, no, they would have been still contained in the material, not free-floating. And so, for example, with the spraying of the mastodons, that's a good example where the diamonds came in as diamonds, as little teeny micro diamonds, millions of them in a spray, and were not contained in meteorites or any other material. They were not associated with any other material. They were simply little diamonds. So, you know, when you understand what's going on and you actually make real determinations and can fit these pieces of the puzzle together, you don't have to create wild scenarios. So the planets formed and then they got smashed apart and this rock came and, you know, and the diamonds formed deep in this planet even though it didn't have time to. The fairy tale science is just that. And that's why it'll never be able to give you a straight answer, because it's, you know, it's, you put one Band-Aid on top of another. It's going to change gears just a little bit here. I want to mention also that my paid cast is this current set of topics I'm talking about, lectures dealing with my books. And so that's, I consider very important. It's something that I wanted to do for a very long time, that to supplement the books with more detail, with more, with deeper insights into these particular topics. So, and also to put them into perspective, the history that was going on at the time, some of the details that don't come out by simply reading the books. So I'd encourage people to go check that out. The webcast is $3.95 a month. And I'm also doing this basically for posterity. When you look at the history that has gone on, a lot of it gets changed. A lot of it gets altered. And I can really see, after living, you know, my life as through being a kid and then growing up and going to college and then coming out and into the real world and going to graduate school and then becoming a professional and being a professional in, say, industry and teaching 10 years in university level, and also just traveling around the world and understanding the changes that occur, the different viewpoints, and the changing of history. I see that in my lifetime, I've seen a lot of really bad history written, and a lot of lies that have become facts, and just on and on. So it's important to put the time we're living in into perspective. So that's what I'm also doing in these lectures relative to the books, and then jumping on particular scientific topics. For example, last week one of the topics was dealing with the charge to mass ratios, which is, understanding that is extremely important in the understanding of how plasmas work and the plasma discharge comet model, etc. So very important to put all of these pieces of the puzzle together. So that's what the paid cast is doing, and that'll go on for quite some time. It's a real educational tool, and if people are real students of my work, they'll also look at the DVDs. The DVD number 4, which is downloadable, the Astronomy, Astrophysics, Space Science course. And there will be more of them. But right now, I think it's important. And also for kids to understand that what they're being taught in standard, even if they're homeschooled, they still have to go through the standard textbooks. which have twists and turns in them that are just, they're really distorted information. In a lot of cases, things that could not possibly be true. But remember, kids, like this friend of mine said, kids are just a sponge. You know, they're looking around, they see things, they watch what their parents do, and they watch their teachers, they go to school, they're watching what other kids do, and they're like a sponge. And so if you have, say, for example, a textbook which is filled with just completely bogus information, they're learning this. They're sitting there absorbing all of this at a young age, and it becomes very difficult for them to change. And this is one of the problems I see all the time, is that people will say to me, well, you know, I just don't believe that. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't believe that? You don't, based on what? Based on what you were taught when you were a kid in third grade from a textbook that was completely biased and incorrect, filled with incorrect information? Well, I mean, what does belief have to do with anything? And that's one of the issues, too, is that kids are taught to believe information that comes from a textbook. Well, it's in the textbook. It must be true. And then if you answer that on a test and you get an A, then that must be true. And you must be smart. You learned something. Well, not true. Pretty much, I would say about probably 95% of what you learn in school couldn't possibly be true. The history, the science. And, you know, maybe they were trying to make a good stab at it at the time, but there's no reason anymore for the schools to be teaching this totally incorrect information. But because of the textbook industry, because of the influence of the, say, the teachers' union, that they can only teach from a syllabus and they cannot vary at all from that syllabus, they can't bring in any new information, that schools are, the teachers, I mean, they're just, and then the teachers grew up learning totally incorrect information, and they're teaching it to the kids. So, I don't know. I just, as far as education, people ask my advice. I'm just glad that I don't have to deal with it. I would not personally go back and teach in a school anymore, ever again. You couldn't get me in the front door of a school. Because it's just, you know, you come in and you got too many issues to deal with that have nothing to do with educating the kids in a real way. You know, and the people are just restricted. They can't bring up extraneous topics because if it's not in the syllabus, they could be fired for bringing up a topic that's not in the syllabus. Just absolutely insane. So a little bit of commentary on that. But back to my paid cast, that's why I'm starting, this is starting in April. April 5th is the first lecture on that, dealing with my books. And so I feel it's very important for young and old people alike to understand what the history was like, because believe me, it is so distorted. It is so ridiculous, like, you know, Comet Hale-Bopp or the whole Planet X story and all the disinformation and all the wannabe so-called experts that came out and just repeated and repeated all the same incorrect information about so-called Planet X topics. And, you know, they got on radio shows and, oh my goodness, just garbage piled on garbage. And, you know, not a shred of it had anything to do with reality. That's what's just amazing to me. But remember that a lot of the radio shows are owned, purchased, and paid for, and there's a real effort from above. These people don't have control of their content, and so it's really a zoo out there. That's all I'm saying. Okay, well, enough of that, but I encourage you to join the paid cast. It's for you, for the family, etc. And it's $3.95 a month. Very inexpensive. All of that on my webpage. I'm going to go through some email regarding questions that I've gotten about water filtration. And so this is just, they've been kind of stacking up here. And so a lot of times people will write in and they'll ask about radiation and say, do my water filters remove radiation in case of, you know, nuclear fallout or just radiation in the environment, et cetera. And the reality is there's a reason why you don't advertise taking out radiation, because people think that it's somehow stopping the radiation from occurring. If you have a uranium atom, or if it's another strontium, let's say, or one of the ones that comes out of nuclear power plants, these are heavy metals. So you can remove the heavy metal atom, but you cannot stop it from the radioactive decay that occurs. And so when you talk about filtering radiation, there's some misunderstandings that people have about what you're doing. And so the filters take out the heavy metals, but they're still radioactive. And they do this by virtue of the fact that they take out heavy metals. So I don't advertise that it takes out radiation. And anybody that does advertise that it takes out radiation is really selling you a line of goods, because it's just not, it has to be qualified. You have to understand what you're doing, and especially if it's in a high pressure, like an inline type of filter, the reality is that the radioactive material usually comes in attached to dust. It attaches to a thing, so it's in the air, or it's in the environment, or it's comes from dirt that's in the water or whatever. Then that radioactive atom is attached very loosely to dust or dirt particle, and so when you trap that dust or dirt particle in a filter, it can easily break loose. The nuclear atom can easily break loose and flow into your water system if the filter is not actually removing the nuclear material. So this is a complicated topic. I just wanted to give you a little bit of an education on that. And if you had a lot of radiation, you would not want to filter your water through your nice stainless steel water filter, because the filter element itself will become contaminated, very simply put, and the walls of the filter, et cetera, will become contaminated. So there's other ways to deal with radiation. But to be frank about it, each case has to be examined under its own merit. So that's a complicated issue. If you're aware of that, then maybe write in and we'll give you some more advice. But remember, just go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.